welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page podcast with Stacey
and Jessica.
And we're here to talk about her 50th book.
We're here with Melissa Taylor Cruz, the author, to talk about her
50th book.
And what's the book called, Melissa?
It is called The Birthday Girl.
And it has such a beautiful cover.
Yeah.
I mean, I know. Did you have any say in that?
Oh, my God. I am the worst because I never know visually what works. So I just tell them not to listen to me because they came up with this amazing cover. And I was like, I don't know. And everybody's like, it's the best cover. It's so great. I'm like, really?
If that cover was candy, I would take like a fistful of it and put it in my pocket.
It's a really nice cover. I like it.
Thank you. Yay. I'm so glad.
So let's talk about what's between the covers. You mentioned at the afterword that it took you a while to write this book.
It did. I had this idea for this book for almost 10 years. And it came from the first line of the book is how she buys this house in Palm Springs for her birthday party. And we bought a house in Palm Springs when I was 38. And I joked that we bought it to throw my 40th birthday party in. And it was kind of a joke that became kind of real in my head. I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to have this huge 40th birthday party for me. Everybody's going to fly out. I'm going to wear this amazing dress. It's going to be in Vogue. I was like, it just got like delusional and like extravagant. And, you know, it was kind of in my mind, this revenge party, you know, like everybody who was mean to me, or, you know, it's like, you know, all the mean people in high school, look where the bitch is now. You know?
Yeah.
isn't that kind of everybody's dream just a little
just
bit?
Like, look how good I am.
You show up at your reunion and you're like wearing a fierce dress and you're just like, yeah look at me.
Mm-hmm. No. And I remember, and we didn't have the party because I was kind of grossed out by that feeling. I was like, oh my God, what is this monster? Like, why do I want someone to do this? You know, like, what is the need for this? But I remember feeling so fascinated by that emotion, because I hadn't really felt like that. You know, I like to throw book parties, but, you know, that's work. I don't really like a lot of attention for myself, but I really wanted it at that moment of turning 40. And I thought, what is it about 40 that brings out this feeling, you know, in people, in women, particularly women?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's a female thing.
Yeah. And so I talked about this book for 10 years and my husband said, just write it already. So I finally wrote it.
Well, it's great. I read it in a day and just couldn't put it down, especially like, cause at first I'm reading about Ellie and I'm just like, oh my God. And it's funny, cause like a blurb that I read, you said she's reminiscent of Mimi Force from the Blue Blood series.
Oh,
I was like, oh my God. I was like, no, 100%. She's like Mimi.
Oh,
and
yay.
I was just, and I love that series too, by the way. And
oh, thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm just like, oh my God, she's crazy. This life is so insane. And then as you get further in and like more kind of secrets are getting uncovered about her life and from what happened 24 years ago, I'm just like, oh my God, like what is happening? And that twist, I did not see it coming.
It was really great. Stacey, I think you finished it last night, right?
Yeah.
And I woke up this morning to a text that she's like, wow, I didn't see that coming. So one of the things I love so much about the book, so just like really quickly, so the book is about Ellie, and she's a model and a clothing designer, correct?
Yes, she is.
And she buys this house in
the third
in Palm Springs to throw this 40th. And everybody who's been significant in her life is going to be there. And there's a whole bunch of other things going on at the same time. She and her husband, Todd, they're like
Stinson.
Yes. Because she had been married to somebody, to De La Florence.
Yep. Archer.
And she and her husband, Todd, they have twins and, you know, like
their other kids.
they're going through that whole, like, they've been married for a while and they're a little crunchy at each other, but they do still love each other, which yeah. I adored.
That was awesome.
Oh, yay. Thank
yeah, you. Their relationship made me really happy in the end. I wasn't really sure. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. I wasn't sure where it was going. I'm sorry.
We were talking about it just before the call that, like, we did not see this coming. We thought it would be something completely different. And I'm like, the entire time, I was like, oh my God. And my husband's just like waiting to turn off the lights at night. So like for me to finish this book so he could go to sleep. And I'm like, oh my God. He's like, what? And I was like, this book, it's not what I thought.
It subverts every expectation you have. Especially, I know I've been reading a lot of thrillers or twisty, turny, suburban, you know, intrigue type books.
Yeah,
and every suspense. Time you think something is something, it's not. And it was so clever. And like, I think I said to Stacey, it was like a bait and switch almost. But a good bait and switch. Yeah. Because the switch was like what you really, like something you really like, something that really surprised you and it paid off. Whereas the classic bait and switch, I guess it doesn't pay off. So Ellie buys this house and she's going to show off, but there's all of these other things going on. And then it keeps switching back and forth to her 16th birthday. And it tells the story of two young girls who live in Portland,
yeah.
I believe. They grew up in a trailer park in an area, I believe, where more people were more affluent. And it was Mish and Leo, and it's about Leo's 16th birthday. And
what they do that night. And I like how the flashbacks between present day and what happened 24 years ago when they were 16, that it like corresponds time-wise, like 6 p.m. here, 6 p.m. there, 6:30 here. Like, as the night progresses, what happens, what secrets unfurl. And I was drawn in.
So, oh, yay!
So well done, Melissa.
I'm so glad. You know, I thought, like, and I joke because, you know, when I say it was 10 years, it was probably even 20 years because I always wanted to write a murder mystery. And after my first novel was published, which was adult contemporary, I told my editor, oh, I want to try my hand at, like, a mystery. And she said, okay, write a proposal. So I wrote a proposal and I sent it to her. And she's like, yeah, no, you can't write these.
No.
And I think after 20 years in the business and having written all these books, I think I understood structure, and I had a very, you know, I wanted to build to that twist. I'd read a couple of books that were very inspiring that way, where it just kind of takes you, it's so surprising when you realize what's happening, and I really wanted to pull that off, so I'm glad that you think I did. Yay!
Yeah.
It was definitely something I wanted to do.
And also, I'm turning 40 in October, so yes!
I keep thinking you're closer to my age.
No, I'm not. Sorry. I'm not. I'm just very short. But I'm 4'11". I wear. But yeah, no. So it was just kind of like one of those things. I opened it up and it knocked me on my head. And obviously, I'm not buying a house in Palm Springs. We had a plan, which I don't even think is going to happen, and it's fine. But I was like, hey. Her birthday is around the same time as mine, and we're turning the same age. And, you know, it was interesting because I was 16 the same time as Mish and Leo. So it really, yeah.
It really resonated with
it. It really resonated. So how did you come up with just like the whole, like the interwoven, I guess, intricacies of Ellie's life and contrasting it with Leo and Mish?
I knew I wanted to write about her, this woman who was very successful, but also kind of, a mess, you know, and like that she wanted to show off her life just as it was crumbling around her. Because I think that's, part of what happens a lot when people have these kind of elaborate ideas. We actually went to, the party that's described there, and it was a friend of mine who was turning 40, but, you know, it had this, and he had flown in designers. There was all this kind of, there was more staff than people. It turned out only 12 people would come. So there were 12 of us within like a staff of 20. He'd like redone the hotel. You know, he just made, like, it was just the most elaborate thing. But then his wife couldn't be there because she was in rehab. So the entire weekend, all we talked about was how she was in rehab. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so crazy. He spent all this money and, you know, wanted to have this like perfect, you know, I think he'd been planning it for a year and she just got sick of it. She said, why are you having this? You know, I think part of it was her revenge on him that he wanted to show off so much. So it kind of stayed with me, and we threw him one of the parties. There were several parties, and one of them was at our house. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, what if you wanted to throw this crazy party, but then it all falls apart? But then I thought, okay, it falls apart because something happened in her past. And I thought, okay, what happened, you know, in her past that she's trying to hide? And for me, the book kind of came alive, and I knew I could write it when I realized, oh, I'm going to do the past. I'm not just going to have it in, you know, as things that we find out in the present. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to show it. I'm going to be there, you know, in the 80s when she's, you know, 16 and show what happened. And I'm a YA writer. I could do that. and I was really excited that I got to write about teenagers. You know, I kind of snuck in, you know, what I do all the time in my adult novel. And I think that's when I kind of figured out that I could do this story. And I wanted to write about best friends. And, you know, is a lot of it is inspiration with people that I know or that I've feelings that I've had, you know, imagining what would happen, you know. And I was a journalist and I covered a lot of fashion and I covered a lot of models, you know, who come from, some of them come from, you know, very underprivileged backgrounds, and then their lives become, you know, they take them to the stratosphere, and they, you know, have this kind of very hardscrabble background, but because of their beauty, it kind of propels them to this life where one second they're in a trailer park and the next moment they're on a yacht in Greece, mm-hmm. you know, with the richest people in England, you know, and you see, you hear about all the sordid stories, but there's also stories where, you know, the 30-year-old British heir to, you know, all the estates in whatever, Canterbury or whatever, like falls in love with them. And then they become, you know, the Real Housewives. Yeah. It's just kind of, I just thought like that was such a fascinating trajectory, you know, that you could have those two experiences in one lifetime, you know, being at the bottom of American society, then all the way to the top of international society. So I thought, wow, you know, there's only one way to do it. And people don't realize how powerful beauty is, you know? So I thought that was fascinating.
It's definitely like interesting to see that. Cause I like the scene where, Ellie's next to her husband. She's like, who did he bring? Like, who is that like hooker? And he's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? She's like, she's definitely a pro. And she's like, I never sold my body. And like, I'm married, Archer. And I was like, I would never think of anything like that. But I was like, when reading it, I was like, you want to know what? Good for you, Ellie, because you landed your daughter to have a nice inheritance.
And it's that's the other thing. Like, on one hand, she's like, ah, Todd, you gained weight. You're doing
like, stop
this.
Eating the pie.
But then she's just like, but don't cheat on me because like, I love you.
She was such a complex character. She wasn't just this like rich, beautiful woman that you want to hate because she's just so
greedy. It could have been very easy to make her completely vapid, and you didn't.
Yeah,
and it was
her layers are good, especially
thank you.
Just some of those like the relationships, because I got a kick out of reading her relationship with Montserrat, Todd's ex-wife.
Oh, Montserrat! Like, where do you come up with your names?
Yeah, the names are really cool.
They're amazing.
And I was just they're nuts.
I mean, she's so just terrible, this toxic person who becomes a life coach. I just laughed. I lived in LA a long time. You know, and these people would have these crazy backgrounds and they would do these horrible things. And then you'd say, oh, what's happening with her? What happened to her? And we're like, oh, she's a life coach. I'm like, her?
Yeah, like that. Like, how?
Her life. And now she's like a serene yoga, you know. I mean, I just thought, you know, oh my God. And so that came from that, you know, like, And, you know, I'm still a New Yorker. I'm in L.A., but and I do like L.A. now, but it is a different place where, you know, these and, you know, it is a place where all these amazingly good looking people who find, you know, answers in the, you know, kind of this new age crystal, you know, life coaching, you know, and, you know, so it's a little bit of a satire of that. But
you bring I've had it up a lot a bit of in the book.
Friends with toxic ex-wives. So heard a lot of stories.
You bring that up in the book of how like LA is different from New York and it's different from like London and England and the different people that Ellie had in her life throughout the different stages of that of, oh, you know, like these people are more like this. And I just, when it's like, oh, you know, like the billionaires are coming. And I was like, I can't imagine meeting a billionaire. And like, you got Mean Celine and this.
Celine. Every time I read it, I chuckled.
Yeah, because I was just like, because you end up having like, you know, nicknames for friends and everything. And I just have to say, this is going back to when Leo and Mish were 16. And I was like, I'm reading it and they're going to Stacey Anders' party. And they didn't even realize like it was her birthday too. But I was like, oh my God, you spell Stacey correctly. Like, thank you. Because you spell it the way I do.
Yes, that is the right way to spell Stacey.
Thank you. I feel very validated.
Okay,
my
good.
Childhood of not finding my name spelled the way at like all those tchotchkes.
Really?
Yeah, because they'd always spell it without the E. So
without
I'm like, oh.
E?
I'm like,
no,
can't.
The E.
Yeah, I can't get a keychain with my name on it. Like, but it's just like all the names were interesting and like not even just I'd say of the characters but of some of the settings like their trailer park Woods Forest like
that was and that was like a
stuff what, like that around
like the woods and the forest like isn't that the same thing
yeah
right
and I was trying to think of how exactly that works
but I mean you find names of like either like affluent neighborhoods or even like trailer park homes that have like, oh, like welcome to, I'm trying to think of one that I know offhand.
There's so many, there's,
I drive past
there's
them.
So many Knob Hills, like everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But that's usually it's an affluent area. And I know now that like I've seen like back in the day before the name of the neighborhood was kind of put in like an iron lettering that's like not against anything that you can graffiti. There was one that I know I drove past several times, and of course they put the obligatory S in front of it because, you know, they're gonna like somebody is gonna call it Snob Hill and vandalize it.
Oh, yeah.
They've made it more difficult to do that. But I've seen Knob Hills in several different, you know, places.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I grew up in San Francisco, so I remember that. Like our Knob Hill was like the peak of the snobs.
So you had a Knob Hill too, yeah.
Well, because even growing up, like we're on Long Island, and I grew up in Jericho, which is the town over from this library. And there's, you know, here's some of the neighborhoods. You know, this is like, I'm trying to think of the actual neighborhood names because, like, you had regular neighborhood names. Like I grew up in East Birchwood. There was West Birchwood. Like White Birch, and then you had they're from like, you know, like Muttontown, and then like, oh, these estates,
and then there's North Syosset, but that
like, it's all different,
yeah,
but you know who lives where and what neighborhood is that culture and whatnot.
I thought the relationship between what was it, Mish and Brooks, back in when they're reminiscing how Mish was dating this very, very
popular jock
rich boy, and Mish was goth.
Yeah,
and
I forgot
Brooks was
about
not
that.
Goth.
Just imagining them together, like putting on her dark nail polish and lipstick.
Yep.
And just all the comments that I think like Mish's mom had, not Mish's, it was Leo's mom, about, you know, like, oh well, he's not going to marry her, but it's his parents are tolerating it for now. It was
like, oh, it's just a phase.
Yeah,
grow out of it.
Yes.
And
you know, the hoochie girlfriend phase.
but again, like that was another really interesting relationship that wasn't what you thought it was going to be.
Yeah, no, I think you know, having grown up in the 80s And then also, you know, seeing stuff, you know, kind of in those John Hughes movies that kind of define, you know, there's like that, the, you know, the whole Pretty in Pink kind of genre, you know, it kind of tells you one story. But, you know, the reality is, you know, it's never that, you know, it's never that black and white, you know, and there would be, you know, kind of these blonde kind of rich boy jocks, you know, dating kind of like more of the kind of gothy slash slutty girls, you know, who were my friends. And I just remember being so fascinated by that because I didn't see it in popular media. And, you know, there was always that like, oh, the mean people, they're so mean. And, the, you know, but it was almost that was like a cliche. It's like, it's not that. It's like, you just don't get invited. They're not mean to you to your face, but like you never get invited.
Yeah.
There's always this feeling of being an outcast, but it's not direct. It's always kind of this indirect thing where you know your place and your place is not with them. So I wanted to write about that. And then, you know, I mean, he grows up in this kind of affluent, you know, his parents are lawyers, you know, and they're not closed-minded. They're like, yeah, sure, you know, you can have this girlfriend. It's totally fine, you know, with them because they think, you know, it's not going to last. You know?
And he's going to go off to what, Dartmouth or something and meet the Dartmouth girl.
Yeah. And I was talking to a couple of friends who grew up, you know, kind of like that. And I remember a friend of mine said, you know, I would sit there and they were all going to Dartmouth or Columbia or Harvard. And she was like, I could barely, you know, I barely passed SATs. And then she ended up having this huge company. She was so, you know, kind of never went to college, but built this business. And you know, she always thought of herself as not smart because she wasn't smart like them. And I was thinking, oh, that's so fascinating. You're like the smartest person I know. You know, she was so street smart and, you know, knew the trends and built this, crazy thing. And I thought, oh my God. And she, you know, a little bit, she inspired the character too. But I remember that was a story she said about going to those parties and knowing those people.
Because there was a part where her daughter, is it Imogen, but they called her Gigi?
Uh-huh.
Yep. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was, you know, she was being teased because she wasn't book smart, you know, smart like the other kids were. And Todd says to her, well, you're smart like mommy.
Yeah, that was cute. That was a sweet scene.
And it's true. There are different kinds of smarts. There's different kinds of being shrewd. You could be 100% book smart, get perfect grades on the SATs and be really naive.
Yeah.
Yes.
And unable to kind of function in the world where people are mean.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or you could just be really, really good at taking tests and just like in general, like you function better outside of the academic field and, you know, you find yourself in a trade, or you might not be good at taking tests at all, but you still find something that works.
You pick up things, whether it be like trends or, I don't know, like finance or like social norms and culture, to be able to like really blend and do well with that. People.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So is this like one of your favorite books that you've read? Are you allowed to pick a favorite
of your own books?
Oh,
written, not read.
No. I was like,
that's what I meant.
It's definitely very close to my heart. I, you know, had this idea for 10 years. I've always wanted to write this book. So, and it was really easy to write. It felt, just very natural. So I feel very protective of it. But yeah, I think it is one of my favorite books that I've written. I think it's very close to my own voice and my own personality. So when people say, you know, like, oh, she's like the character you love to hate, I'm like, really? She's that unlikable? Like, you know, she's missing me in like a grotesque funhouse way.
In the beginning, that's what you think, but really, it's so nuanced.
Yeah, you peel her layers to realize like what she feels about stuff, and it was nice because like usually, you know, when you have the blended families, it's like, oh, it's the step monster, and she's like, no, like I love this child, Sam. Yeah,
Sam, we haven't even spoken about Sam, who was their oldest, who went to Stanford, as Ellie liked to tell people.
Stanford.
But she manages to drop in every conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I think, you know, that is, you know, see, being, you know, at this point with a lot of divorce friends, with a lot of stepkids, you know, there's this cliche like, oh, the horrible stepmom. And it's just not that, you know, and I'm so, you know, and it's kind of powerful to have so much love for a kid that's maybe not yours biologically, but that's your kid. I mean, you raised that kid, mm-hmm. you were there for her, and in some cases, you know, it's their real mothers who I've seen it sadly, you know, where the real mothers are the monsters, you know, and it's so great that you at least have a stepmom who is there for you. And, you know, like she says, you know, I love her just the same. You know, I always count her. She is my kid. Yeah, no, I think that really is part of what makes Ellie lovable to me, that, you know, she has so much love for her children.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, when I mean, clearly it was bragging rights. Our eldest goes to Stanford. But do you think she took a little bit of pride in the fact that Sam kind of had a rough beginning as well? You know, she had this monster, Montserrat, as her mom. And, you know, even though she did end up with a lot of privileges that got her to Stanford, maybe she felt a little bit of a kinship that this young girl was able to overcome this and she was part of it. Or do you think it was really more bragging rights?
No, I it's funny. I think that is true. I think that's why she kind of relates to Sam, you know, because she had, you know, kind of this chaotic life with her mom. And I think that's, you know, in a way, Ellie sees herself more in Sam than in her children who were more, you know, kind of sheltered. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, thank you so much.
It's a great book, and it was great talking to you.
You are so much fun to talk to. Yes. If you ever write another book, please come talk to us.
Yes.
You will write another book. What am I talking about if you ever write another book?
All your books are really great, and it's nice to see, like, because I've read Blue Bloods, I've read Witches of East End, I watched some of the TV show.
And you write the Descendants books.
Yes, and I need to get into it because I love the Descendants.
Awesome.
But it's really cool to see you do something a little different than what you've done before. And I highly recommend it to people. I can't wait to, like,
it's going to be a staff. I'm going to make it a staff pick.
Sames.
Yeah.
Sames.
Melissa De La Cruz, come back and talk to us. This has been so much fun. You clearly love what you do.
Will do. Thank you.
So
thank
once
you
again,
so much for having me.
Thank you. This is Jessica and
Stacy
and Melissa De La Cruz. And we are going to close this chapter of
Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.